Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Patrick Garrity. How you doing, my man?
Great. How are you?
Oh, good, mate. I'm good. It feels surreal seeing that background in real life and seeing that half pipe and all those skateboards because I've seen them so many times on LinkedIn. So it seems very strange.
Yeah, that's great. During COVID, I decided to, it's funny, someone mentioned it today. They're like, I was on Zoom. They're like, is your office a skate shop? And it's, yeah, and that was the idea. I was bored, it was COVID. I was like, let's make it a skate shop. So that's how this came about.
Yeah, cool, mate. And I'm glad to hear you've been, you said you've been going multiple times every day recently, you said, yeah?
Yeah. I hit every day, but I've been, like yesterday, yesterday I skated once, Sunday I skated twice. I think Saturday I skated twice. I just try and get out and, man, I love it. It's a good creative freedom and have a lot of friends in communities.
Yeah. I'm just, as you're talking, I'm just getting flashbacks now of there was a video of you getting injured, wasn't there? You put that on LinkedIn, didn't you?
I broke my wrist in the spring.
Like
the second weekend in June, I broke my wrist. You know, I had to get pins. So, like, there's a nice little scar there you can see. But the doctor was like, you can't skate for 12 weeks. And I was like, doctor, I'm going to be honest with you. You have 12 hours. What should I do to prevent further injury? And the doctor's 12 hours, Patrick, you're going to have surgery. We're going to put like a blocker, a nerve blocker in your arm. You cannot skate for 12 weeks. And I was like, dude, it's summer. Like my arm is not required to get on a skateboard. So I'm sorry. Like you're out of luck.
Oh, God, I just.
And hey, we're here, right around 12 weeks later, and I didn't further injure it. Things are good; it's working. Yeah. You know, balance what the doctor says.
Yeah, I know. I was just getting shivers down my spine and thinking about you falling over again in the same way. But I'm very happy to hear that you didn't. So well done.
There've been other injuries, but not to the hands. So I'm good.
Okay, good, mate. Okay, good. That's okay. You could probably handle other ones, but the same one again. I don't think that would have been. I think that could have been
terrible.
Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah, he told me if I have to come back, if I injure it, re-injure it, the surgery is 10 times worse. And I was like, okay, that's all right. Good to know. Thanks.
Okay, I just hope the people that do your health insurance aren't listening to this podcast, Patrick, because your premiums are about to go through the roof, my friend.
Maxed out.
Yes. Cool. All right, my friend. I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro, Patrick, for the listeners that don't know you. So you started life off with a sales background for around four or 5 years, and I can see you closed some multi-million dollar deals here, which was good. About that gave you a good grounding on the communication piece. You've then progressed really nicely in the security world. You was at Duo Security for over 7 years, held various different director level roles, director of sales, director of ops, and director of product marketing. You then held multiple VP positions to different cybersecurity companies. You're also a seed investor and advisor at Sensis, and you are currently a security researcher and vulnerability intelligence at Vulcek. So yeah, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah,
we're gonna have a lot of fun.
Yeah, we are. We pinged each other on LinkedIn loads about this, haven't we? Like, literally, we'd arrange it and then, like, we'd both get busy or one of us would get busy. And then I'd see a video of your skateboard and I'd be like, oh, there he is. I'll get him now. And I think after about the fifth time of doing that, I got you. So the persistent recruiter in me paid off in the end, Patrick. So there you go.
It's great. Persistence is important in anything. So,
yeah,
it's how we get it done.
It is, but I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you, mate? What do you get up to? Day in the life like right now for you, my friend?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, most of my days involve skateboarding and with cybersecurity. Work-wise, generally work in the work week, and then I like to work odd times as well. So you'll find me late nights, weekends. A lot of my time is spent in looking at different intel sources, looking at vulnerability exploitation, vulnerability disclosures, and then coordinating with our team and our customers. And so I've always, throughout my career, all the way back to early on in sales, I've always played a technical role. Even though a lot of my titles might be marketing or sales, a lot of my work was in sales engineering. And so naturally, I'm always interested in the truth. I'm trying to understand how things work. But yeah, nowadays, spend a lot of time researching vulnerabilities, exploitation, coordinating with different people across the industry and trying to help get more rich and broader intelligence to downstream consumers and into products and tools. And so I'm in a really unique position where, like, I also get to work with a lot of the product security companies and the research teams themselves and get to talk about what's going on, what we see, what's working, what's not working, and more or less just help get downstream consumers and defenders better visibility into vulnerability and threats.
Yeah, cool, Patrick. You're in a unique situation as well in the sense that to go from, like, you're talking there about Intel sources and vulnerability exploitation, like, to find someone that's good at that who's come from a sales background is pretty rare. And I bet it's highly advantageous to have those sales skills and that communication piece nailed down first before you go and get really low level and technical. I can imagine that being quite a plus point.
I started my career working in retail sales and doing technical stuff too, like a lot of computer repair, if that makes sense. And so having those foundational skills of, like, how do I communicate? How do I work with people? Persistence, like I mentioned, like continually asking people in the proper manner about things, reminding them. Any of those skills in sales and marketing are directly translatable. And then the other side of marketing was more or less, how do I visualize things like threats in a way that everyone can understand? And so naturally, you can apply a lot of marketing principles to research, right? So then you can summarize things in a more easy to consume way. So a lot of my research tends to be a lot more high level, a lot more consumable, a lot more understandable than some of the historical research in this area, in this space, which has been a lot of fun. That helps educate the masses, which is a really important piece.
Yeah, it is, Patrick. Yeah, I mean, that actually, you said there basically putting threats in a way that are easy to consume and for everyone to understand. That is just such a valuable skill set. I spoke to so many CISOs, and that's basically what they're getting paid fortunes to do, is to translate it into simplistic terms for everyone. Is there anything you know now about how you've got good at that skill set that you wish you knew before? Or is there any ways that you've been able to refine that skill set that could help the listeners?
Yeah. So one thing I would say is reiteration, fast, quick prototyping and reiteration, and then getting it out there as quickly as possible. So when I started my initial research in this space, it was about 2 or 3 years ago, probably 3 years ago now. The thing that helped me the most was I would go and look at the data. I'd create a visual of the data, and then I would just post it on LinkedIn. And immediately people would then criticize me, or they would be like, oh, this is a cool perspective, or a multitude of different things. Early on, I got a lot more criticism from my posts because I'm learning. So you have to be extremely vulnerable in doing this. But here's one thing I think that people don't realize is social media can be an amazing outlet for feedback loops. And so at the time when I first started doing research, I was publishing a visual almost every single day, if not 2 or 3 a day, just looking at different data sets. And most of it, to be honest, was like, hey, let's do a pivot table in Excel to look at the data and then put it in a form so I can see it visually, because I'm a visual learner and a visual person. So part of it was doing it myself. A lot of what I learned is make sure you validate your data when you're doing this type of work to understand that, like, what you're outputting is aligned with the actual data, especially if you get into writing Python scripts or using ChatGPT to write Python scripts. There's an important step that you have to take from a research perspective and making sure that you're communicating ground truth. But yeah, the biggest lesson I would say is be curious, be vulnerable. Try and get stuff out there and find people that will provide feedback. And social media is like one of the top ways to do that. But also be understanding and open to complete, absolute annihilation and criticism. Because I assure you, as a new researcher, like, you're going to get hit with that. You're going to make mistakes. You're not perfect, but that's okay.
Yeah. Do you know what, Patrick? I just made a note here because I was going to say, like, major kudos to you, because you just pushed over it a bit, but you mentioned it again at the end there. But to go out there and post and just take the criticism and look at it as a positive and get the feedback and use that to get better and better, That is easier said than done, mate, because not a lot of people have got the confidence to do that. And it's nice to hear you say that. And it's a great way to, like you said, social media can be a great place to get feedback, but it takes some real confidence to do that. Not a lot of people would be able to do that. It's good.
After doing this for 3 years, like when people criticize me, I try and understand why. Because ultimately, their perspective usually has some aspect of truth. And so that's part of the interesting thing is if you take criticism as, well, am I wrong or is this a different perspective? And so I took the time, even though the harshest criticism, right? Taking the time to engage with those people and understand, like, why are they so cynical and why are they so critical of whatever I said? Normally, it's because they have a different perspective. It's not that you're both right or you're both wrong. And so I think really processing and seeing it in that light really helps you gain a better understanding of a more complete version of the truth. What I find when you're doing security research.
Yeah, cool. What do you do? Do you bounce stuff around in comments or do you hop on a Zoom with folks that you, or how's it go down?
Yeah, I think it depends on that side. Someone pinged me today and messaged me like, hey, there's some interesting research stuff. It's cool. Let's hop on a Zoom, whatever, or you have feedback. Comments, like, yeah, I engage. Help me understand your perspective. Do you have other data that says otherwise? I think being really open and transparent in that respect of, and so, dude, sometimes I'll be honest. Sometimes I poke back and poke fun at it too. Now. Yeah. I didn't do that early on, but to some extent, it's, oh, yeah, I understand that other perspective now completely. And sometimes there's just loss of context. So I think it just depends on, like, in what circumstance. But comments definitely are a great place to converge. Other ecosystems as well. So, like, I found a lot of special interest groups, or we even have our own Discord where we have, is open to anybody, called the Extended Vulnerability Community, where, like, everyone can just chime in and say what we want. That's a little bit more unfiltered. It's like, dude, we don't really, as long as you're not being a complete malicious person, we don't care what you say. And so I think providing out places in open forums, but I know if I post there, like, there's going to be some criticism, but sometimes I post there because that's what I want.
Yeah.
Is part of it too. Yeah. It just depends. And then meeting the people wherever they're at. Some people won't hop on a Zoom. Some people want to hide behind a keyboard. That's cool too. I can empathize.
You know what else is interesting? You said you make fun. Oh yeah, like you have a bit of banter with it, and have a bit of a joke. Now it's interesting to hear you say that because you're reminding me of what it is like to first post. And I'm touching on this point for people because there'll be people listening that probably want to build a bit of a personal brand, to learn more, help themselves, help other people. And you do forget what it's. I'm the same now. I can have a bit of a laugh on LinkedIn, but. At first, it was like terrifying for me, like posting. And I can remember I used to, and again, same as you, like I don't really get it so much anymore. But when I first started posting, you would get a bit of a kickback. And then once you've been doing it a while and people realize that you're just going to do it anyway, people just accept you a bit more and maybe you get a bit of a following.
There's definitely been times early on where it's like someone roasts you completely for all the right reasons. And you're like, dude, I just want to crawl into my shell and hide and not ever do this again. I would say, like, after doing it for 2-3 years, like, you just learn to roll with it and manage that. And nowadays you have to look at things. I look at things like a different perspective. Yeah, people have different perspectives. Like, also people have different means of communication. So some people are a lot harsher than others. That's just their style. That's okay. And that's generally how I try and operate, is just trying to be open as possible, regardless of any type of criticism, and then embracing criticism. So,
yeah. I think as well, like, sometimes if, like, you get an absolute roasting on LinkedIn, especially if you've just started posting, I think to you or to that individual or to me, if it was me, it seems like such a big deal. But to everyone else, it's like, as soon as it's down the feed in a few hours, like, yeah, it's just yesterday's news. I think in our heads, it seems like such a big deal. But to everyone else, as soon as something else happens tomorrow, it's just forgotten and no one cares. So, yeah, I think for people listening, Patrick, I'm a big believer in making your resume 3D, getting your LinkedIn page strong. You can get your GitHub repo good, or a YouTube, or at least a LinkedIn. Like, I do think it helps career growth and progression over the long run. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think being active and visible and participating, you mentioned like some of the stuff sometimes I get into on GitHub is like making corrections of like misspellings or like inaccurate data. But like part of that is getting consumed downstream by consumers, which means they have inaccurate data if that stuff isn't fixed. It doesn't mean you have to be like the most sophisticated developer to make commits and contribute to open source projects. I think on LinkedIn, yeah, highlighting some of the things you do or sharing some of the things you work on are a great way to get visibility and build trust with people and also learn and get feedback. So there's always a balance there. But yeah, that's how I've connected with a lot of other security researchers, a lot of other product security teams, security professionals. And then, of course, you got all the sales and marketers, which I came from, but it's as you progress out of sales and marketing, you like, you want to move further and further away. I'm kidding. I love our sales and marketers, but yeah, it's like, for me, that's been a career progression is spending more time on the research side and on the intel side and spending time with the security researchers more so than the sales and marketers. And those people are super important. I don't want to diminish your discount. But yeah, that takes a lot more persistence.
It does. Setting up, it gives you a good grounding there, doesn't it? Because it is, sales is a tough one. Like it really does build that resiliency muscle, doesn't it? Because it's tough and you get so many. I can see on your LinkedIn, you're close.
Dude, my first job in enterprise sales back in 2008, I think it was. I was an SDR and I remember cold calling and then going in the bathroom and throwing up in between sessions.
Oh no.
It was brutal. So I could empathize with like you sales folks. Like it's not fun. Nowadays, like I think if I wanted to, I could probably just cold call people and be okay with it. But yeah, there's some aspect of doing and learning and trying and having rejection. And still pushing through it, that's real and translatable to a lot of other things.
Yeah. Why were you sick, Patrick? Because you were so worried about it made you sick. Is that what it was?
Oh, dude, the rejection. I think sales is real when you're cold calling. And this was like a long time ago. Like this is almost two decades ago now. Crazy to think about. But yeah, man, it just gave me anxiety. And I would just go in the bathroom and cramped up.
No, it does. I mean, I still do it now and again now because we're doing more of the pod and the branding stuff. You do a bit less. But even now when I go to, it's like, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. You still get those feelings. And especially if you've done loads of it, but you've not done it for ages, you go back to do it and you do feel that pressure still.
Oh, one thing I encourage people, and I think this is similar to skateboarding. So like in life, I'm 41 years old, right? I'm getting a little bit older. I'm not that old, but a little bit older. And I think the biggest thing I've learned that skateboarding teaches me and my professional career teaches me, like transitioning into security research, get out of your comfort zone. Like when someone asks you to do something or you have an opportunity to try something that you haven't done before, most people are like, oh no, that I'm going to be uncomfortable. For me, it's okay. Yes. Give me that and five more things like it and I'll go do it and I'll learn. You're going to learn from, I'm going to trip on my skateboard. You're going to learn from your trial and errors. And more often than not, like you're going to be successful after doing those things. And I try and surround myself with great people. Like yesterday I went skateboarding. I had some friends that were out there skateboarding and I showed up and they're way better than me on skateboarding. But guess what? They taught me like 10 more things that I didn't know I could do. And so I think that vulnerability piece and like really keeping an open mind and trying new things that are outside of your comfort zone really, from my perspective, help you learn, progress, and then help you be in a position where you can share your experiences with other people. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think that's probably the funnest part of my job every day is like getting to do the research, getting to collaborate with people, but getting to share what I've learned with other people, which is really impactful and powerful. But that also then opens you up to criticism. It all flows together as far as a process. But yeah, genuinely, to me, I think like flipping that switch and being okay and being vulnerable and putting myself out there, when you do it, it makes you feel a lot better every day.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I'll tell you what as well, I bet skateboarding, I bet like in terms of switching off, if you've been doing like some really intensive security research, vulnerability tests, but I bet it's a great way to switch off because you probably can't think about anything apart from falling off.
You know what I find is like when I'm skateboarding, it's okay. I hyper fixate on just skateboarding and in the zone. I'm not thinking about anything else. That's movie time. I think also sometimes I'm by myself, sometimes I'm with friends. That gives you different levels of motivation, right? So like with friends, maybe I can see how they do tricks and then I'll go practice by myself or with them, either way. But I don't know where I'm going with this, but naturally I think just keeping an open mind and, you know, to me getting out there and doing it, like I'm not going to perfect and be a professional skateboarder. I understand and know that. But I'm going to try and progress my skills and what I'm doing and try new things. And I think generally, as that like ties back to work ethic, working environment, like a lot of the projects I do, I'll work a Saturday, Sunday, five nights in an evening that's outside of my normal work so that I can learn. And I don't do that every week. I don't do that every day. Like the summer, I probably do that less than when it gets colder in the winters. You're going to find me doing that stuff a lot more as it gets colder and darker throughout the days because I'm in Michigan. But there's a season for everything. And yeah, generally, I think it's like just getting outside your comfort zone, trying new things is going to put you in a position to learn and succeed. And then sharing that's just valuable to everyone else. So that's a pretty fun part of it too.
Yeah, definitely, Patrick. The other thing as well I can relate to that is like you talked about that you go and skateboard with some people that are, you know, slightly, you know, above you and they're teaching you new things. It's a bit like being in a work environment. If you're around the good people, they lift you. I think you set gas to the standard. If you're with a load of razor sharp guys and girls in the, on the security researcher front, it will make you a better security researcher. If you're with some rock star skateboarders. Same with skateboarding.
That's a big reason why I came to Volncheck, right? And Duo, I think, was similar, but it's, hey, who are the best people in this space that understand things like reverse engineering, vulnerability intelligence, exploitation, what's going on the ground floor? And it's funny because I think when I joined, I was like, hey, I'm not a developer, but I understand these things and I think we can collaborate together. And being open and vulnerable and knowing that, hey, these are different disciplines, these are different skill sets, but they can complement each other. And then you all learn together, like everyone learns more. I think to some extent, you have to understand as well, you can't boil the ocean and do everything. Mm-hmm. But the more you can progress in different areas and learn, the more from an experience skill set perspective you're going to have. And that can be incredibly valuable in a lot of different ways, especially when you're building like product security companies, which is typically where my passion and experience lies.
Yeah, cool. Patrick, what I wanted to ask you is, you're a pretty cool dude. Yeah, I feel like you probably connect with most people. And then you're also holding these positions at like director level, VP level, investor. Like, do you progress? Not everyone can get those postings. If I'm listening now and I'm like, I really want to get to VP level, or I really want to get to director level, I'm glancing down your LinkedIn. How did you get those that progression and those promotions, mate?
Okay, so first off, like I took a step back. And I'm a security researcher right now, right? And it's not a step back. I see that like in relation to like titles. And so generally it's like, I hate job titles. I just hate them. Number one is asking for them is one way you can get a title. Number two is persistence in earning them. Number three is having friends. But generally I think first is it's okay. Naturally, I was managing people because I offer to manage people before I ever became a manager or a director or a VP. To me, it was like, hey, how can I help the people around me? How can I spend time to accelerate? How can I help build processes that are going to help our organization grow? So naturally, when I joined Duo Security, I was an account executive. And they needed technical help. So I was like, hey, I'll take on the sales engineering role because I'm technical. Then we needed to hire three more people. So we went and hired three people and I helped get them up to speed as sales engineers, right? We probably should call Patrick a manager or a director. So maybe not as natural as everywhere, you know, how this career progression happened for me. And so now you have a team of 10 people. Let's give you the title of director. And now we want to move you over to Europe to go figure out all our problems over there. Let's give you a different title. To me, I like could care less about my title. I do functions that are probably under 10 different job roles at any time. give or take, maybe less, maybe more. But I think generally just having the attitude of, hey, I'm here to serve. I'm here to progress the company. I'm here to do what's right for the company. I'm here to do what's right with the people around me. Generally, that goes a long way, and that helps career progression. My latest, after being VP of marketing at Nucleus, I was like, I don't want to be a VP or director anymore. I want to be on the ground floor with everyone else cranking on shit, excuse my language, making a real impact, right? And that's not to diminish the importance of leadership roles like directors, VPs, and others. But for Patrick, myself, I'm like, dude, I want to be in the trenches. That's predominantly my focus. And I love chasing down the skeletons in the closet and fixing things. So that's what I spent a lot of my time more recently. So I think my other piece of advice through these stories I've learned is like, titles are great, but pay can come with titles too. I don't want to diminish that as well. But for me, what's more important is, hey, am I making impact? And am I learning? And am I helping others? And if those things are true, I don't know. Nowadays, being a little bit older, it's like, I'm not as set on chasing the titles or the roles, if that makes sense. And maybe that's a lot different than most, but not everyone needs to be a VP or an executive. I think that's a real reality. And for me, maybe I'll do it again, but do I need to be one? I don't know. I'm cool with what I'm doing.
Probably got it out of your system a bit. If you hadn't have had all those titles and that success, maybe you'd still be chasing it. You've got it.
Totally. Yeah. What I would say is like those titles when I had them were that like it created so much more stress. Like managing people, going through rifts, but trying to do forecasting, trying to do all these different functions. As you climb that ladder, it comes with more responsibility, right? And I don't want to discourage people from going that route. I'm just like pretty honest with myself. Hey man, if I don't have to deal with that stress and I can be skateboarding more and I can do more security research, that's a win-win. And so that's genuinely where my mind is at as it relates to like career focus and what I want to be doing. Like I want to be doing security research, and that's my predominant focus day in and day out, which is pretty fun role.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, wicked budget. I think the key thing you said there as well is at the time, you just basically, you were just focusing on the process and doing a great job. And I was going to say paying forward, but it just sounds to me like you weren't even trying to pay forward. You were just making sure your teammates were in a good spot. You were making sure everyone's career progression was optimal and being looked after. And the progression just sounds like it just took place naturally, probably almost without you thinking about it.
Yeah, and there is a second. So there's two other things I would consider here. One is making sure you're working with people on the right team, like people that value you genuinely. Like at Duo, I never had to ask for a position or a title. Like it was the executives going, holy shit, this guy's working his ass off. We're going to put you in this position, in this role because we value. I think a lot more often you have to ask, unfortunately. I think that's a real reality of a lot of the workforce. So the other thing is like when I made the career progression from Duo Security to joining a startup, man, you have the negotiation chips to negotiate whatever you want your title to be if you join a startup. So I was like, hey, I want to be a VP of operations because that's like a super high important name. And I ran sales, marketing, and product there. So it made complete sense that I had that role. But I think sometimes people don't ask for more compensation. They don't ask for titles. They don't ask for equity. If you're an individual contributor, manager, VP, whatever, ask for as much as you think you're worth and more than whatever whoever's offering you. Because more often than not, and you probably know this, right, is if you don't counter, you're not going to get the extra chips that are on the other side of the table. And naturally, I think individuals need to be asking for titles if they want a higher title. They need to be asking for more pay if they want more pay. They would need to be asking for more equity. Now, I've been very fortunate that I haven't, for the most part, had to do that in my career. But I don't think that's the case for most. I think most people should be advocating and asking for that stuff if they're crushing the network.
Yeah, cool, Patrick. You only get one chance to negotiate all that stuff, really, because once it's done and it's signed, you're not renegotiating every 5 minutes. So it's got to be, you've got to get it nailed. The other thing you said there as well is, you were like the leadership team at one of these places. You just said, God, this guy's just working so hard. I still feel like hard work, it just gets you everywhere, doesn't it, man? Like if you're in there grinding, I think especially if you're in the right place, it just gets noticed.
It does with the right people. It does with the right people. I've had like experiences in other startups. I'm not going to name any names where like it didn't. And there's different ways people manage, but I think that goes to talk about what I mentioned earlier, which is like making sure you're working with the right people. If you're not working in an environment where you get along with other people you're working with, where there's mutual respect, where you're valued, like that's a pretty toxic environment from my experiences. And so for me, that's really important is that like I'm working with people that from a mission perspective that have core values and respect towards each other. Doesn't mean we can't joke around and have fun too. I love having a lot of fun with the people around me, being able to push each other and challenge each other a little bit from a thinking perspective. That stuff that I've learned I really value as a person, that becomes really important to the success overall.
Yeah, cool, Patrick. I like the way you work as well. Like you've got a very modern way of working. Like you'll slide off and do your skateboarding, but then you'll crank it out some evenings in the weekends. I think when you're working remote, I think almost like pre-COVID, that was almost like, no, you can't. But like now it's, if you're in the, again, if you're in the right spot, like you can work like, because I'm a bit like that. Like I work a bit sporadic and I go in really hard and get really obsessive, but then something else might crop up and I might be doing stuff when everyone else is working. And it's a nice way to work, isn't it? Like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have to balance. It's sending slacks on a Saturday at 3:30 in the morning probably aren't ideal. So learning to use the delay button. It's funny because some of my coworkers have a joke where they just tell me to go to sleep, Patrick, on my Slack post. But you have to learn what works for you in the business. And not every business is set up for someone that's like cranking at 3 a.m. on a weekend. I'm almost always working 9 to 5. I always work that, and then everything else I do is gravy. But it tends to be sometimes I'll wake up at 2 a.m. with an idea, and I just want to go research the idea and get and share my information or knowledge or what I observe. And so that's always a balance in there. Yeah, a little bit of ADHD there, triggering me to think about these things. But that's a lot of curiosity. And to me, like, it's paid dividends throughout my career, putting in some extra time outside of the normal work hours too, just to progress and learn. And I don't think translating from VP of marketing to security researcher would have been possible if I wasn't working another 20, 30, 40 hours sometimes a week, pursuing the curiosity that I had regarding vulnerabilities and exploitation. So that's just the reality that it's, sometimes you gotta let curiosity run itself and explore different avenues, and that might come at the cost of some of your free time.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But I know that. And all the best guys and girls, they're not just working their set hours and then never. They can't help it. When I've been in different parts of the world, I've rang people and I've had conversations when it's 2, 3 a.m. in the US and people that are sat in their home labs, like up to all sorts, having loads of fun as well, by the way. It's just like that. If you want to get up there and be like up there with the best.
The other thing I've learned is to respect other people, that a lot of people are going to work 9 to 5 and have that structure, and that's their work. I respect that too. Like sometimes I wish I had more boundaries, but generally, right, people have different work styles. They have different priorities. Not everyone loves to skateboard. Most people don't. But I think learning to expect like different people are going to have different boundaries. Not everyone needs to work a ton more to get ahead. But some of us do, and some of us like to. And also, I think there's a balance of not discouraging that as well, and finding the proper balance to support people work-wise. So I think a lot of developers I see, they're making commits on the weekends. My guess is that's what they want to be doing. It's not that they're trying to catch up on work. And open source projects too. A lot of people working outside of their normal jobs on different projects related to software that they're curious and excited about.
Yeah, cool, man. So, Patrick, on the research side, at the start of the show, you mentioned you're looking at various different vulnerability exploitation and intel sources and stuff like that. Is there any kind of go-to areas online that you're going to that could help the listeners? Or is there anything that's really helping you basically find out what you need to find out on the research side of things that could help other people?
Yeah. First off, and related to known exploited vulnerabilities, like we maintain a free community edition version of our Kev, known exploited vulnerabilities. So Anyone can get access to that. It has reference citations and a ton of information. On the front of that, a lot of the research we're doing is tracking hundreds and hundreds of different sources and combing through evidence for exploitation and publishing to that. And so generally, like, our intention there is to make it as easy as possible for the highest value threat intelligence feed of the things that you really should fix from a practitioner perspective. And the go-to source historically was CISA-KEV, which is a government source. The biggest challenges we saw were there's a limited amount of evidence and it's often delayed. So we're really focused on how do we get timely intelligence fast, quick. So if anyone's interested, yeah, you can go to vonecheck.com. You can find the free resources if you click on community. They're all commercial API accessible. We try and democratize as much as possible the exploitation data as that helps defenders on the other side. But I mentioned, like, another great resource, there's some intel that kicks off of there from time to time. We include that all in our source as well. I'm involved in the CVE program. That's a pretty cool program to get involved with if you're doing vulnerability disclosures or consuming vulnerability information. And then another cool source, which is a nonprofit Shadow Server, collaborate a lot with Shadow Server and the folks over there that kick off a lot of exploitation intelligence. So they're doing great things as well.
Yeah, cool. You said it's hard to set boundaries. I can see why, because I bet when you're in the thick of it and you're finding cool stuff, I bet it's hard to put down.
I found some stuff this weekend and I just want to beeline towards it, but it's like, Patrick, like, you have to, there's a balance, right, of time, resources, and urgency, right? And so sometimes I'll find stuff and it's like really cool, but maybe it's not urgent. And okay, when can I slot this in my schedule to maybe go down the rabbit hole and explore that? And I think that's a fun part of my job, is I have some capacity at times. Right now is a season where I don't have as much, where I can run down the rabbit hole and see what's going on underground and kind of surface that and bring it so other people might see it, that new perspective. So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. I have a lot of travel coming up though. Like, I'm going to Montreal next week. We have a free conference. We're running ThreatCon in Herndon, Virginia. And that's the, I think, 3 weeks out. And then I'm a backup speaker at GERTCON in Grand Rapids the first week in October. Genuinely, I don't like to travel this much because then I can work more. But when there's opportunities to go, like, talk and engage with the community, I like to do that too. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool, mate. Talking to conferences and stuff, how was Black Hat? Is there anything, any kind of key bits of information you picked up that could help us all?
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I think for me, because I work so much with product security vendors, it was nice to meet a lot of the people that I get to talk with online in person. I think Black Hat is becoming more vendor-centric, like RSA used to be or still is. I wish I would have made DEF CON. I didn't make DEF CON. I had a 40th birthday party to attend, so I couldn't stick around. But I heard DEF CON was a ton of fun. And then we had an event we hosted, which was pretty sweet, where we had a DJ and, I don't know, maybe 300 or 400 people, which was pretty fun as well. So overall, and then I got to go skateboarding at a skate park called Cray Ranch, which is pretty famous. And I met, oh man, now you got me really excited. I met Steve Stedham. So one of the original skateboarders for Palo Peralta, Steve Stedham, has a shop in Las Vegas. And I got to meet him. And whenever you can travel, engage with this security community, go skateboarding, meet some of your heroes, like, that's pretty sweet.
That sounds like a good period. You did that, went to Black Hat, met your skateboard hero, came back, went to a 40th birthday party. It sounds hectic and sounds fun. Sounds good fun.
It was good. Yeah, this summer's been awesome. Like, just the good looks of, like, research, skateboarding, collaborating with people, traveling a bit. Yeah, it's been really, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing that all with a broken hand.
And you were in London as well, weren't you? You were in London for
Yeah. The week before I broke my hand, I was in London for InfoSec Hero, which was great. I had a talk there. Man, I love everything going on in the UK and Europe as well. There's just a lot of interesting stuff, I think, on that side of the pond. with CRA, not necessarily UK specific, but like the European Union specific Cyber Resilience Act and NIS2. There's a lot that's going to change the space that we're in. And a little bit more competition as it relates to vendor product disclosures, exploitation disclosures, that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was really really welcoming going there, chatting with everyone, hanging out with everyone. A lot of cool stuff going on in Europe right now.
Yeah, cool, my friend. Wicked. Patrick, I used to, as we come to the end here, I used to basically ask which book has had the most positive impact on your career. It can be security related, but it doesn't have to be. But it could be book, it could be podcast, just anything you've consumed, either online or in a book, that's made you a better version of yourself that could help the listeners. Anything spring to mind, mate?
Yeah, the biggest one is The Mud, which is by Rodney Mullen, who's a skateboarder. He invented, I think, over 150 different skateboard tricks. But whether you're a skateboarder or a professional, it really applies. A lot of it has to do with focus, persistence, trying new things, challenges. Like Rodney, it's his autobiography, but as a kid, his dad didn't want him skateboarding. And to become one of the most recognized professional skateboard athletes in the world is pretty cool. So yeah, I would check out The Mud. Yeah, I think you can get it on Amazon. It's not that expensive either. Maybe like 10 or 15, 20 bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what that reminds me of? Like whenever I watch kind of anyone that's done well in any kind of sport or discipline, like you can always really relate it back to your work because there's so many attributes that they have to get really good. And you're like, if I was doing everything they were doing in sport and business, I would, you can just be like, that makes sense.
I've also learned that in sports, your body isn't, you're like, you're never going to be pro in whatever you play in at 40. And so I think also keeping a mindset of being okay with where you're at and trying to continually progress is important. I think that applies to career as well that I think about every day. But yeah, naturally, like, I think it's important people stay active. Like, it's good for your mind. It's good for your health. Yeah. Really, really encourage, that as well. And eating healthy helps as well.
Yeah, it does, mate. I think if AI keeps going the way it's going and we all keep going to the gym and getting some exercise and eating, I think we're all going to live to 100, mate. I think we're going to be fine.
That'll be great.
Well, all right, do you think we've done all right, mate? And we'll soon shot up to about an hour.
I keep on almost working on the skateboard, but this has been a good time hanging out. And I think, too, this is talking a little bit more about just the practicalities of work and life, which is fun. Normally, I'm talking about crazy security stuff. It's fun to talk about something a little bit different now.
It is nice, man. Especially in the kind of remote virtual world, it's just nice to have the conversations and let me and you feel more connected and the listeners feel more connected. It's nice. It's good.
It's great.
Cool, mate. Thanks, mate. It's been nice to chill with you, buddy.
Cool. Yeah, likewise.